Welcome to Transforming Growth, presented by STEG, a CEPR consortium initiative. My name is Tim Phillips, and in this series, I'm investigating some of the most important new research in economic development. In a minute, I'm going to be talking to Federico Uneas from the Central Bank of Chile and Richard Rogerson of Princeton about how countries industrialize. But first of all, I'm joined by Doug Gollin from STEG. Doug, welcome back.
Hi, Tim.
Now, Doug, why did you choose this paper?
Well, this is a fascinating paper and a great piece of new research that is aiming at one of the biggest questions in economic development, which is what determines the differential pathways of industrialization that we observe across countries.
And this path of industrialization, it is essential for countries to industrialize, I guess, if they are going to get to a higher level of development.
Well, we think that's probably right. And yet we see different countries following different pathways as they grow. Some countries, the countries of Europe and North America and today's advanced economies, grew through an industrialization process. And we've seen that process reproduced in the East Asian countries, which have had miraculous growth really over the past 50 or 60 years. We don't necessarily see all countries following the same pathway, though. And one of the goals of this paper that makes it so interesting for me is precisely that it's trying to understand what these different paths look like. One of the things that the authors find, for instance, is that differences in the rate of productivity growth in agriculture, not the industry sector at all, seem to determine the variation in how much industrialization occurs.
Well, let's find out a little bit more about those pathways with Federico and Richard. You're listening to Transforming Growth. Welcome, Federico.
Hi, Tim.
And Richard, welcome also.
Hi, Tim.
Now, Richard, I'll start with you. Why is it possible for employment to shift into the industrial sector when countries begin to develop?
Well, good question, Tim. I think one way to think about this, and this is the view that's captured by our model, is that people have varying needs, and some of those needs are more urgent, need to be satisfied. So in particular, people need to eat. And so this means the agricultural sector produce enough stuff to survive. As they get better at that, it can free up some of their time to pursue other of their needs or desires. And so the shift from agriculture into more industrialized activities can be seen as once people have those basic needs met, and they have time left over to pursue other things, industrialization is part of that process.
And why is it then at a later stage that we observe that employment moves away from manufacturing again?
Another good question. So as the economy continues to develop, as we say, people value a bunch of different goods and services. Some of those things are produced in the manufacturing sector. Other of those things are produced in the service sector. So just as people like the things that are produced in the manufacturing sector, they also value the things that are produced in the service sector. And moreover, as people get richer and have more of their needs met, that may change the things that they value at the margin. So for example, in richer economies, we observe that there's more resources devoted to healthcare, for example. And so another part of the process is that as economies get richer, their demands for different sorts of goods and services change. And so that will also generate a reallocation of activity across economic sectors.
And all these people who were working in manufacturing before, I mean, clearly not exactly the same people, all this employment in manufacturing before, then that's taken up by employment in services, is it?
That's right. So if you look at a rich economy today, like the United States, and go back in time, you can see that nowadays, the vast majority of economic activity and employment is in the service sector. Whereas, of course, if you go back 200 years, most of it's in agriculture. But then during that transition, there is this increase in manufacturing in the middle part of that development stage. And then later on, we're now in a phase where most of the activity, of course, is in services.
Right. So we get this characteristic hump shape in the employment in manufacturing. And in this paper, you've modeled this and you've applied it to what we see for a set of countries. For the countries in your data that went through their transformation during the 20th century, were the dynamics, the peak of this hump, broadly similar?
Yes, let's say to first approximation, if you look at today's rich economies, Western European economies, United States, Canada, Australia, Japan, these countries, by and large, had quite similar dynamics in terms of this hump shape. So it's not just qualitatively they all went through that sort of process. It even looks quite similar from a quantitative perspective.
So the same proportion of the working population ended up working in manufacturing industries and for a similar length of time?
Well, the length of time is a little bit different because some of these economies, Japan, for example, had a miracle growth period post-World War II. Whereas if you look at the United States, that was a steady growth process. So if you talk about the amount of time in a phase, that can vary a little bit across countries. But if you look at the relationship between the employment shares, that's what looks quite similar across countries, even though they might have traversed those trajectories at different speeds.
Federica, when we look at countries going through the process now, are they going to have that same characteristic pattern? Is the hump going to be the same size?
Yes, I think we can split countries, broadly speaking, into three groups. The first group is the group that Richard was referring to, the advanced economies that went through this process kind of in a quantitative and qualitatively similar way. Then you have a second group of countries that are more, if you think, emerging economies, as we show in the paper, go through this process qualitatively, but quantitatively it's very heterogeneous across countries. So some countries go into this hump shape at an early stage of development and other countries at a later stage of development. And also the level of the hump shape, so the fraction of workers going into manufacturing at the peak of the hump also varies tremendously across countries for these second set of countries. And sort of our paper is focusing a lot on this heterogeneity in the second group. And then there's a third group that is a set of countries that haven't gone yet through this process. Many of these countries are in Africa, for example. They haven't gone through the hump shape yet. And so we don't focus in the paper on that set of countries, but I think our model and the intuition that we build in the project can help for maybe getting a sense of the path of these other countries are going to have in the future. So I think there are good reasons to think that given that emerging economies had a lot of differences in terms of the patterns and these hump, it might be that also the countries that are starting to go into this process are also going to have a lot of differences.
So what does your model suggest is causing these different paths to show up?
So one is this preference. As you get richer, you're going to move from consuming food to consuming manufacturing goods and then to consuming service goods. But then at the same time, what's happening is that the productivity of creating those different goods and services is varying over time and across these different goods and services. So you have this fact that, you know, if agriculture gets cheaper, then workers can move from agriculture to manufacturing because now you need less workers in agriculture in order to produce the same amount of goods that you were producing before. And the same argument holds for manufacturing and services. And what we find in our paper is that the productivity growth in agriculture seems to be very important in driving the differences across countries in terms of when the hump shape happens and at what level is the peak of this hump shape in terms of manufacturing share of employment.
Now, one thing occurred to me in all of this is that we often learn that development has been driven recently by globalization in manufacturing and services in some countries, increasing the demand for workers in those sectors. But I notice your model assumes a closed economy. Does this matter?
Yes, definitely. And that's a very important point. Trade can be very important in driving patterns of productivity and growth overall. We don't address this directly in the paper, but we discussed this a little bit towards the end of the paper, shed some light on future research that could take these issues into account. And you can think about trade in different ways, but I think the most important concept is to think about the trade surplus that countries have over their development path. So if trade is balanced year by year, so, you know, the amount of trade that is imported is equal to the amount of trade that is exported at the country level year by year, but there is trade imbalance across sectors. So, for example, countries are importing food and exporting manufacturing. That may definitely change the conclusions and change the mechanisms that are driving the industrialization paths. And more important, if there's trade imbalance year by year, so, you know, overall countries are exporting more than they are importing, for example, then that might also change the conclusions that one might get from this analysis. And for example, what's interesting in our case is that we find that, for example, for China and Korea, we find a gap between what the data tells us the growth of productivity of manufacturing relative to services is, relative to what the model predicts for those two countries. And actually, we show in the paper that along the development of these two countries had an increasing trade surplus over time. So they were increasingly exporting more than what they were importing. And certainly, one thing that you could conjecture is that if you include trade imbalances into the model and you allow for a bigger role of trade, that could account for the path that countries such as China and Korea have had.
How worried should we be about these different paths through this process, Federico? If some of the countries that are just beginning now to go through their transformation, if we observe that they are on a path which will lead to premature deindustrialization or a low hump of employment, should policymakers try and do something about it, or should they just observe it?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a hard question to answer. The motivation of our project was to think about this feature that has been documented in the literature, this idea of premature deindustrialization. So countries that go through this hump shape pattern at a very early stage of development. And so people have been raising the concern that if you go through this hump shape and you deindustrialize very early in your development process, then that's going to be bad for you because you're not going to develop enough technological capabilities, complexities in your production process, knowledge in the production process. So that was one of the reasons why we got into this project. And we had the idea of thinking about, okay, could simply the productivity process that these countries are facing explain what was going on? And to a large extent, we find that it does. So differences in the growth rate of productivity of agriculture relative to manufacturing and services can account for this heterogeneity that we find in the data. But then the next question is, okay, you take that as a fact if you believe in the results. And then the question is, okay, these productivity processes are exogenous in our model. And these are like a kind of aggregate productivity processes at the sectoral level. And then the question is, where are these productivity differences coming from? So it could be either from technological characteristics, things that we, you know, policymaking maybe cannot do much, or it could be about how, say, technology is diffusing across countries and maybe their policy can do something about that. So at this point, the paper doesn't provide an answer for that because that's not the scope for the paper. But there's a good reason to think that future research could tackle this question in terms of understanding how much can policy do in terms of shaping productivity differences across sectors and across countries.
Well, it looks like that's going to be a policy question that is going to be very relevant in the next decades. Federico and Richard, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
You're listening to Transforming Growth. The paper we've been talking about is called Heterogeneous Paths of Industrialization, and the authors are Federico Uneas and Richard Rogerson. It is NBER Working Paper 27580, if you want to look it up that way. Now, next time I'm going to be talking to Catherine Stapleton from the World Bank on automation in advanced economies and what this means for trade and globalization. But first of all, Doug, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tim.
And thanks for all of you for listening to Transforming Growth. You won't want to miss any of our episodes, so subscribe to make sure you hear the whole series. And you can always find out more about STEG by visiting steg.cepr.org.